Welcome to another episode of PhDBINE, Beyond the Lab. Today, we will explore the fascinating world of surgery and regenerative techniques. In this episode, we are exploring cutting-edge topics in orthopedic surgery and joint preservation. I am Elena Artioli, a second-year PhD student and a fifth-year orthopedic resident at the University of Bologna. Today, we are diving into the science and clinical strategies behind preserving joint function, a critical area of research with major implication for patient outcomes and quality of life. We will cover four key topics together with three guests. Gianandrea will start by discussing meniscal deficiency and the role of meniscal allograft transplantation. Then Luca will walk us through osteotomy procedures, both with and without meniscal allograft transplantation in the post-meniscectomy arthritic knee. After that, I will present cartilage treatment options for both the knee and the ankle. And finally, Bart will guide us through what happens when joint preservation is no longer an option, leading to total knee replacement. Each segment will offer a deep dive into biomechanics, clinical evidence, and future directions. Let's get started with Gianandrea.
Hi, my name is Gianandrea Lucidi and I'm an orthopedic surgeon at the Rizzoli Institute in Bologna, Italy, and also I'm a PhD candidate at the DBINE department of the University of Bologna. I'm 35 years old and my research focuses on meniscus substitution techniques, specifically meniscus allograft transplantation and collagen meniscus implant. The aim of my PhD project is to identify risk factors for failure in these procedures so we can better define indication and improve patient selection. Let's start by talking about the meniscus, a C-shaped fibrocartilage structure in the knee that distributes loads, absorbs shocks, and stabilizes the joint. When the meniscus is damaged or removed via meniscectomy, patients face a meniscal deficit, which increases contact stresses on the articular cartilage by up to 200% and significantly raises the risk of osteoarthritis. One treatment option is meniscus allograft transplantation, or MAT. This involves arthroscopically implanting a size-matched donor meniscus to restore biomechanics and delay cartilage degeneration. It's typically indicated for younger, active patients, usually under 50 years, who had the total or subtotal meniscectomy and suffer from persistent pain in the absence of advanced arthritis. Short to mid-term outcomes are promising, with 70-85% of patients reporting pain relief and improved function after 10 years. However, its long-term chondroprotective effect is still debated, and complications such as graft failure or infection may occur in up to a third of patients. Now, in recent years, an alternative approach has emerged: the use of meniscus scaffold, particularly the collagen meniscus implants, or CMI. Unlike MAT, which uses donor tissue, the CMI is a bioengineered scaffold made up of collagen type 1 and glycosaminoglycans designed to stimulate the body's own regenerative response. It's intended, of course, for only partial meniscal defects, not total replacements, and requires an intact meniscal rim and preserved meniscal horns for proper integration. CMI acts as a biological augmentation, guiding tissue regeneration by promoting cellular infiltration, vascularization, and extracellular matrix deposition. Early studies showed promising clinical improvements and pain reduction, and the 10 years follow-up data confirms that many patients maintain good outcomes. However, 20-year studies suggest that while the CMI improves symptoms, they may not provide significant long-term counterprotection, especially because the scaffold could gradually degrade over time. There are also important differences in patient selection and indication. While MAT is more suitable for larger or total meniscal deficiency, the meniscus scaffold, the CMI, is indicated for younger patients with a focal defects who still have a stable knee, good cartilage condition, and no severe malalignment or instability. CMI, of course, is not recommended in case of advanced arthritis, bone-on-bone contact, or complete horn and root loss. From a research perspective, CMI raises many intriguing questions. Can we improve scaffold integration through biologic augmentation, for example? How does time since meniscectomy affect the outcomes? How do patient-specific factors like age, cartilage status, or compartment involvement influence the fatal risk? Both MET and CMI are part of broader effort in joint preservation, offering options to delay or avoid joint replacement in younger active patients. Yet, as my PhD project explores, careful patient selection remains crucial for long-term success of these biological interventions. And next, let's explore the osteotomy, which is a surgical procedure aimed at realigning the knee, either alone or in combination with meniscus transplant. Luca, can you tell us something about that?
Thank you, Gianandrea. My name is Luca Solaro. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and first-year PhD student here at the University of Bologna. In the post-meniscectomy knee, particularly when there is already a varus or valgus deformity, there is a higher chance of developing osteoarthritis. In fact, after meniscectomy, varus or valgus malalignment exacerbates cartilage wear, accelerating OA. High tibial osteotomy or distal femoral osteotomy procedures aim to correct this, redistributing forces between medial and lateral compartments. These surgeries have been around for decades now and were in fact the first invasive treatments developed to treat OA. Long-term results are satisfactory, with HTO alone reporting survival rates of more than 90% at 5 years and more than 70% at 20 years, despite decreasing outcomes as arthritis progresses. Pairing osteotomy with meniscal allograft transplantation aims to tackle both alignment and meniscal deficiency. The logic is sound. A stable, aligned knee protects the graft, while the graft restores load distribution. Despite osteotomies combined with MAT have been shown to lead to satisfactory outcomes, clinical data available are mixed. Some studies highlight the protective effect or realignment when performing meniscal allograft transplantation. Some others show a reduced survival rate of MAT and realignment compared to MAT alone. The stage of joint degeneration and cartilage status seem to be influencing factors, suggesting the surgical timing is critical. So, is it adding meniscal transplant to osteotomy beneficial in an early or moderately arthritic post-meniscectomy knee? This question led us to develop a randomized controlled trial comparing the treatment of HCO or DFO alone to a combined treatment of osteotomy plus MAT to restore at best the affected compartment. 26 patients are randomized in each group. Informed consent is obtained and the treatment is performed in the same hospital by senior surgeon with peculiar expertise on osteotomy and MAT. Patients are followed up with subjective and objective knee scores, imaging both X-ray and MRI, and gait analysis up to 12 months. For sure, there is a clear biological and biomechanical rationale in combining procedure, but the superiority of one treatment over the other is yet to be proven. And now, let's turn it over to Elena, who will talk us about cartilage treatments. Hi, Elena.
Hi, Luca. Thank you for the introduction. Here we are again. I will talk about cartilage treatments for the knee and ankle, where full thickness defects threaten joint integrity. Surgical techniques for osteochondral lesions can be classified into three categories: reparative, reconstructive, and regenerative. Reparative techniques, such as drilling and microfracture, are minimally invasive procedures that involve creating small holes in the subchondral bone to stimulate the growth of fibrocartilage. However, fibrocartilage has inferior biomechanical properties compared to native hyaline cartilage. Reconstructive techniques involve harvesting hyaline cartilage from a healthy joint and transplanting it into the lesion. This ensures that true hyaline cartilage is used, but there is a potential risk of donor side morbidity. Regenerative techniques use various biological agents, such as stem cells or cultured chondrocytes, to regenerate tissue with properties similar to hyaline cartilage. All these techniques can be applied to the joints, especially the knee and ankle. Treating osteochondral lesions of the ankle presents unique challenges due to the joint's curved surface and limited blood supply. Microfracture remains the most common approach for small defects, less than 1.5 square centimeters, but regenerative methods, including scaffolds seeded with stem cells, are gaining ground. In this context, we are currently evaluating the outcomes of a new technique that combines the minimally invasive nature of retrograde drilling with the regenerative potential of a scaffold soaked with bone marrow aspirate, aiming to harness the advantages of both the approaches. The preliminary results are promising, but we'll keep following up with the patients to see if the effects last over time, or if there is a progression towards degenerative osteoarthritis. Unfortunately, sometimes the cartilage is so severely degenerated that not regenerative treatment is truly effective. Bart, what can be done when joint preservation is no longer a viable option?
Hi, my name is Bartomi Dobromir Bulzatsky-Bogutsky. I am at the last year of the doctorate in the Debenham department of the University of Bologna. I will now address the consequences of advanced cartilage degeneration, typically observed in osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis of the knee is a normal issue. It affects more than a third of adults over 60, and for many it means chronic pain, stiffness, and reduced quality of life. Historically, total knee arthroplasty has followed the mechanical alignment principle. That means implanting the knee components in a way that creates a straight limb 180 degrees from hip to ankle. The logic? To distribute the load evenly, reduce wear, and extend the life of the implant. And in that respect, it works. But there's a twist. Many patients still aren't completely satisfied. In fact, only about 22% of the people rate their total knee arthroplasty outcomes excellent. So why the disconnect? Recent studies have shown that neutral alignment isn't actually the natural state of most people. Many healthy, non-arthritic individuals have some degree or varus of valgus alignment, meaning their knees naturally angle slightly in or out, so forcing a straight line during surgery may not always restore normal function or comfort. Where the new alignment philosophies come in particular functional alignment, which tailors the implant positioning to the individual's native anatomy. It's an approach that prioritizes restoring the joint line height and soft tissue balance. To support this, technologies like robotic assistance and patient-specific implants are increasingly being used. But here's where things get even more interesting. Some researchers have started asking, if we change the knee alignment, what happens to the ankle and subtalar joint? Emerging evidence suggests that correcting the knee frontal alignment can impact the ankle, especially if there's already some underlying arthritis in there. In some cases, it may worsen symptoms or even spark new ones. That brings us to the doctoral project. The hypothesis, the different knee implant alignment philosophies, mechanical versus functional, could lead to a different outcomes in the alignment of the ipsilateral ankle, the one of the same leg. Right now, only one study has directly compared mechanical and kinematic alignment in this context. This new project aims to build on that, collecting data to see if and how ankle alignment shift based on the knee alignment strategy used. In short, it's time to stop looking at the knee in isolation, because when it comes to human movement, everything is connected.
That marks the end of our journey through surgery and regenerative techniques in orthopedics, from meniscal allografts to osteotomies, cartilage repair, and the pivot to total knee replacement. These strategies reflect a spectrum of innovation and challenge. And with that, we finish up today's episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for more episodes of PhD Debenham Beyond the Lab. Until next time.